Hey, Corey here. We've had an influx of new listeners, and so I just want to make sure that if you are new to the podcast, you don't just jump in and start listening to these daily episodes, which we've been doing. Please go back and listen to the first at least 8 episodes so you have an idea of what Collapse is, what it is that Corey is talking about. Also, if you've been with us for a while and you're enjoying the content, please join us on Patreon. We would love to see you there. There's a link, as always, in the description. All right. Hello, everybody. It's been a bit, and there's plenty of changes and updates to go over before we dive into this episode. So the first thing is obviously a bit of a change in format. I am currently recording this on video. This is going to be posted to YouTube, and so that's going to change a bit of the audio element. I'm not going to neglect the audio. Still going to try and go strong, so if you're listening on podcast, this will still be a great way to do that and enjoy the content. But you can also join us on YouTube. We're going to have a bit of a slideshow presentation that goes along with the conversation. That will add a bit of a visual element. You know, I can include some things image or source-wise. There won't be a ton of that today, but it'll be a good tool to be able to use in the future. Obviously, also, you may notice a lack of Kellen. If you've joined us on Patreon, then you know that Kellen, a few weeks back, decided to step away from the podcast, at least temporarily. Don't know, you know, if it's going to be a long-term move or not, but he just had his personal reasons for needing to step back and, I guess, refresh from the podcast, spend some more time with his family and such. He's got a very busy workload. He has to travel for work and things, and the amount of time that he's able to spend with his family is being impacted in part by the podcast. So grateful for like 140 episodes with Kellen, 100 and I think we're at 660 or something like that on the bonus episodes on Patreon. Obviously, I mean, you can tell that the consistency is the right word of our podcasting took a huge dive over the last year or so. Kellen and I hit a very busy time in our lives, both with work and also with some personal projects that we'd taken on. And so that impacted us heavily. And to be fair, Kellen and I made some mistakes as well in the direction we tried to take the podcast. We tried to put too much on our plate from a perspective of starting the other podcast, the Building Up Resilience podcast, which I'm not giving up on, but to be completely transparent, is probably taking a bit of a backseat right now, just so that I can get back to the basics and really get back to what we were doing well and what we were doing consistently, which was talking about Collapse. And so, yeah, that leads to today. Some of those personal projects have lightened up finally, and there's more time available to me. And so I can clear up some of my headspace to focus on content, focus on this podcast. We've been doing really well. We've been doing better at keeping up on our weekly podcasts for the Patreon episodes. So if you have been on Patreon, you've noticed that we've still been posting there relatively consistently over time. And that will also pick up in being more consistent as well. Okay. All right. So as I got ready to sort of dive back into this and tackle this podcast anew, right, with new fervor and excitement for what direction to take it. It was kind of hard to think about how do I jump back in now without Kellen on my own, and what do I talk about, right? Because the focus of the podcast over the last 150 episodes or so has been taking a topic, right, and breaking down each individual topic in a conversational way. If you're new to the podcast, then you may be wondering, who is Corey? What are his credentials and why is he qualified to talk to us? And the answer is, I don't have any credentials and I'm not qualified to talk to you. I'm as qualified to talk to you as someone who has done lots of research on their own, who feels like they have a good grasp of the situation and an overall understanding of why things are the way they are, and is decent at being able to talk about it, to teach about it, to break it down again in a way that is simple. I am not a professor of climate science or biology or ecology or economics or any of those things. But I do feel like I'm comfortable sitting here talking to a camera and breaking these things down in a way that is organized and helps make sense of something that is a really complex topic. And so that kind of drove me to think about what some of the frequently asked questions are around collapse. If you've ever talked to somebody about it, if you've ever had a loved one who has brought up any of the wild things that have been happening over the last 5 years or so, and you say, yeah, well, actually, I've got these kind of thoughts about what's going to happen, you know, what the future is going to be like, they might ask you questions, right? And more before they ask questions, they're probably going to be extremely skeptical and look at you like you're a conspiracy theorist and all those fun things. But if they are willing to listen to you, they ask questions. And here's some of those questions that we hear. When will collapse happen? Who will be the most affected? Why won't technology simply prevail? What will collapse look like? Why are you so negative? What if you're wrong? Whose fault is it? How can I protect myself? And lots of others, right? There's hundreds of questions. And I thought it would be fun to explore some of those questions. Instead of going at things from, you know, each individual topic, let's talk about questions that people have and break down why we feel the way that we feel as collapse-aware folk. Okay, and so the first question that I thought we could tackle today is, why do you believe collapse is inevitable? So most likely you're listening to this episode because you are very familiar with the topic already. Most likely you have listened to the first 150 episodes of this podcast and you're feeling well-versed in it. This is a theme that has come up throughout the podcast, but I think it gets lost sometimes as we get into the weeds, as we talk about the details of different elements of collapse. I think that sometimes we forget this principle and why this is so important. If you are new to the podcast, maybe you were just browsing YouTube and this popped up, right? Or maybe you were introduced to this by a friend and you went and this is the first video you saw or the first episode you listened to. Go listen to at least the first 8 episodes of the podcast. And then from there, you can pick and choose, you can listen to them all, or you can pick and choose episodes based on your interests. But the first 8 episodes are going to help break down the thesis and what we truly believe in and why. And when I say we, I am, of course, referring to those who consider themselves what's called collapse aware, people who have done this research and flipped from that feeling of like, man, things are weird and I don't understand, like, why are bad things happening and why do I have this weird feeling about the future, to feeling like you understand and can see the systems and the way our systems work and why they will lead to collapse. We talked there about what collapse is. We'll revisit that and do an episode on that. But the focus of today then is why are we so sure it's going to happen? Now, let's pretend that we had either, I don't care how you think about it. It could be like an omnipotence, a god. You could think of it as a super intelligent AI. Let's pretend that we had access to the truth. Not the truth as our numbers tell us, as our scientists tell us, not the truth as we're able to find when we Google things or ask ChatGPT, but the actual truth. And if we were to see the real numbers then around the percentage likelihood that society collapses in the next 100 years, right? If you were to ask this being or this power that question, and they said, there is a 10% likelihood that society will collapse in the next 100 years. How seriously do you feel that that should be taken? If we knew that everything about our way of life was going to be destroyed and there was a 10% chance of that, is that something that society should take seriously and make changes to avoid? If you think yes, then whether or not it's inevitable may not matter, right? A 10% likelihood, if that's too much risk for you, then this is an important conversation. if the answer were, you know, if you're not convinced at 10%, would it be 20%? Would it be 30%? At what percentage would you need to feel like this is something that's serious, that I need to take serious and is worth considering, right? This is not a mainstream conversation, and it should be. This is not something that we see in the news. We see people talking about the consequences, some of the consequences of collapse. We're talking about some of the signs of collapse or some of the causes. But when it comes to collapse as a whole, we just don't see it being discussed. So in my opinion, I am not an omnipotent being. I don't have a glass, you know, crystal ball. I'm not able to tell the future. But my percentage, our doom, if you will, is very high for the likelihood of collapse in the next 100 years or even in the next 50 years. So let's talk about why. Okay, so first of all, there's all these answers that are frequently given. If someone were to ask you, why is collapse inevitable, would you use one of these as your answers? So things like resource depletion. I'm going to read the subheadings that I've put here as well. Overuse and unsustainable consumption of natural resources, such as fossil fuels, minerals, and fresh water, leading to scarcity and environmental degradation. Climate change, the ongoing global temperature rise, sea level rise, and extreme weather events caused by human-induced greenhouse gas emissions, posing existential threats to many regions. Ecological collapse, biodiversity loss, ecosystem destruction, and the disruption of natural cycles, undermining the planet's ability to sustain life. Dependence on technology. Our reliance on technology has made us unable to sustain ourselves. The rapid, and this is a sub to the sub, the rapid pace of technological advancement outpacing society's ability to adapt, leading to job displacement, social unrest, and the potential for technology-driven catastrophes. Socioeconomic inequality. The widening gap between the wealthy and the poor, fueling social tensions, political instability, and the erosion of democratic institutions. Complexity. Complexity breeds fragility, increasing system vulnerability to collapse. And political instability. Political instability breeds social unrest, erodes institutions, and invites conflict. So this is just a handful of the items that we frequently seem talked about in the collapse sphere. And these are all very real reasons or are very real causes of collapse. But I will argue that these are not the reason why collapse is inevitable. They will cause it, but if any one of these things on their own was taken and broken down and looked at, there may be solutions to them. There may be things that we as a society could overcome. Even when you combine many of them, I still think that there is a percent chance, right? A non-zero chance that we could overcome these items. They are serious. They are contributors to collapse, but I don't feel that they are the reason or the reasons why it is inevitable. Why is it inevitable? So there are three reasons that we'll talk about in this episode, in no particular order of importance. The first is simply that societies collapse. It's what they do. Historically, if you go back and look throughout the past, societies collapse. They don't last forever. So we'll get into that a little bit more here in a second. The second reason is the growth imperative. And the last is the fact that it's already begun. We're already collapsing. All right. So the first idea around societies collapsing, it's just what they do. Every society collapses. I put an asterisk next to that. We'll talk about why. First, though, the average age of an empire is 250 years, and there's a pretty popular research book that was done by Sir John Glubb called The Fate of Empires, and his is not the only research. There's been a lot of research around this. You can see records of civilizations that we'll look at here in the next slide regarding the length of empires, and it ranges, right? Some empires may only last 100 years. Some empires may last thousands of years. But on average, it seems that an empire survives around 250 years. Now, when you talk about an empire, you're typically talking about one group of people that has power over other people, right? The biggest empires of the world, the Roman Empire, the Byzantine Empire, and so on and so forth. But we can look at empires as the fact that our species has dominated Earth, right? We have dominated our natural systems. We've dominated animal life, and in a way, our own empire as a species. So moving on from that asterisk, every society collapses. There may be some societies that have not, right? Small indigenous cultures do persist. In other cases, societies might change in a big way. They may decline over time or be merged into other societies in a way that you could say, well, they haven't necessarily collapsed. But on the whole, the rule, more than the exception, is that civilizations, especially those of our size and type, collapsed. We've never had a civilization of our type exactly, right? But when you look at indigenous cultures and say, oh, that culture hasn't collapsed, well, maybe that's a hint or a look into what our society could have been or should have been if we had wanted to not collapse. All right. So societies collapse. That's what happens, right? Here's a list of some of the biggest empires and their collapse, how long they lasted, essentially. I'm not going to read each of these individually. I'll read a few of them here. The Roman Empire was around 500 years. The Assyrian Empire, around 300 years. The Byzantine Empire, 1,100 years, but the Mongol Empire, only 160. So on and so forth. The Soviet Union was 69 years before its collapse. This is a small handful amongst the many, many empires that have existed over time, but just to give an idea of their time frames. Okay, so going from there, this one right here is the biggest reason, in my opinion, why collapse is inevitable. We have a growth imperative. So that may be a foreign idea to you. It's not a growth suggestion. It's not a growth recommendation. It's not a nice to have. The system requires growth. Now, there's something called the Red Queen hypothesis, which is named after the Alice in Wonderland. It's taken from that idea that you have to keep running and you have to run faster to stay in the same place. Now, this is used in more of like biological evolution, saying that in order for a species to survive, especially a species who's at the top of the food chain, you have to be able to continue to adapt. You have to grow. You have to change. And you really have to make those changes in accordance to external pressures. As things change on the outside that affect you, you have to be able to adapt to those items in order to survive. That is not what we're talking about when we talk about the growth imperative. That Red Queen hypothesis is how we became the most powerful species on Earth. It is how we got to the top of the food chain, is through that adaptation, through that ability to change. And I think humans have done an absolutely amazing job at that. If that was our only issue, was responding to external threats, I think society has a great chance at making a huge run of it, right? We could go without collapsing. But what we're talking about here with the growth imperative is not the Red Queen hypothesis. It's not reacting to external pressures. It's actually reacting to the pressures that we have ingrained, we have built into our system. So we've built a system that requires a continuous growth. And this in turn becomes a paradox. It's a growth paradox because continued growth is going to lead to collapse. We'll talk about why in just a second. And the lack of continued growth also leads to collapse. Whether we grow or not, each of them leads to collapse in a different way. So moving into that, let's talk about the cycle. Why is it that our system requires growth? And what do I mean when I say that? This is not like a thought experiment. This is not a conclusion that I have made. This is the truth. This is the way the system works. If you understand our financial system, our economic system, then you will understand this principle. So we have a whole episode on this. I think it was episode 6 in the podcast. So go check that out if you want to see this in more detail. But essentially, the way money is created in our system is through debt. That is basically the only way that money enters our system. Debt is created. Next, interest increases on that debt. Anytime you have a debt, there's an interest that has to be paid, right? The only way to pay that debt is through increased economic activity. So we pay the debt from the money created, let's say last year or the year before, by having more economic activity this year. That's the reason that inflation exists. That's the reason that the Fed has an inflationary target that's not zero. You would think it would be great if inflation was zero and everything always stayed the same, but the Fed sets an inflationary rate at 2% target because that is how much we need to grow by in order to meet the demands of the debt we've already created. So again, the only way to pay the debt is through increased economic activity. Economic activities increase through more spending. The only way to have more spending is by people purchasing goods and services, which means that more goods are manufactured, which means that more materials, more raw materials are sourced and more energy is expended, right? So, and then we go through that cycle over and over again. This is never ending and it is required. If we do not continue to increase our debt, we would stop putting money into the system. If we stop putting money into the system, our economies would stop growing. So what does this mean? Basically, it means that in order for us to not collapse, we have to keep our foot on the gas and we have to continue to extract those raw materials. We have to expend the energy to make sure that the economy is flowing. And you can look at any chart. I haven't put any in this slideshow. Maybe I should have, or I can find one for next time. But you look at any chart that shows economic spending over time, debt over time, material extraction over time, energy expenditure over time. It's all a hockey stick. It's all exponential growth, up, 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 and up. And some people might be like, yeah, that's great. Growth is so good. What's wrong with growth? Well, you can't grow infinitely on a finite planet, right? And this brings us all back to the issues that I brought up earlier. Why am I so certain civilization will collapse? Well, now we can look at the consequences of growth imperative, which are each of those items that we looked at. So resource depletion, climate change, ecological collapse, dependence on technology, our socioeconomic inequality, complexity, political instability, and so on and so forth. A million different things, right? 150 of them you can find each an episode on in our previous episodes on the podcast. So those are consequences of the fact that we have this requirement to grow. So what happens? What are the options from here? Essentially, with our growth imperative, we can successfully do that. We can grow. That leads to collapse because, again, you cannot have infinite growth on a finite planet. And there are some people out there, right? There's the techno-hopium side of things that says, well, Corey, we are going to Mars. Elon is going to take us to Mars. Right? And all the sci-fi books that you've ever read about what life is going to be like when we terraform other planets is what we're looking forward to. Long-termism is a cancer. We did an episode recently, one of our most recent episodes on this podcast, around the idea of long-termism and what that actually involves and what that means. The idea of spending trillions of dollars and the amount of energy and resources, again, that it would require for such a venture that is so unlikely to succeed is astronomical. When you consider that the solution here is that, oh, we are destroying Earth and utilizing all of its resources. And so to survive as a species, the goal is to go find a way to go to other planets. And the only planets that we know of right now are not habitable planets. We're going to go change other planets to be as habitable as Earth. It doesn't make sense. But it is the solution that's being thrown out there because at the rate that we're going, we're just going up and up and there's no way out, right? It's not true. There is a way out. But we're not going to take it, most likely. And what is the way out? Well, it's if the growth imperative fails. And that can be through an intentional failure, or it can be through an unintentional failure. An intentional failure of our growth imperative would mean degrowth. It would mean purposefully saying, we are not going to grow anymore. We are going to redo our monetary systems. We're going to change how the economies work, how we define success. We're going to stop with the greed, and we're just going to all live off of what we need to survive. And there's the idea of steady state economics, which basically means that instead of growth, we're able to continue at a flat rate. We basically become a flat line. Now, we'll talk about this more in just a second as well, but we've reached some tipping points that make this incredibly difficult. That steady state could not be at our current state. The steady state would have to be at a lower level of quality of life than we're experiencing now in order to be sustainable. The whole idea of not collapsing involves sustainability, and we are at an unsustainable level right now. And with developing nations moving fast to become, you know, to have the quality of life that developed nations have, it is going to be catastrophic for the level of resource, energy growth, and all the consequences of the growth imperative. So that is to say that intentional failure and a degrowth movement would require a collapse, an intentional collapse, but a collapse. It would be a less intense, a less epic, and a less consequential collapse than the one that will happen if we continue to successfully grow until we grow ourselves off a cliff. But nonetheless, it will still be a catastrophic collapse in the quality of life, in our population, in all sorts of things, right? All right. Obviously, that is the collapse that I would choose. That is the best case scenario for me, is that we decide to make a change. We collectively make a sacrifice. But how do you collectively make a sacrifice that is level across the board, right? How do you collectively, looking at the way that our world is right now, is it even possible? Is it plausible in any way to assume that people will make sacrifices in a fair way, especially when you look at who's in charge, not just of the U.S., but of all over the world, right? It is the wealthy, it is those who have the most to lose that are making the decisions. So are they going to give up the 99.999% of their wealth to live like the 0.0001%? And, you know, if you are a middle-class American, are you willing to take the cut in your quality of life? Are you willing to move from your 3,000 square foot home to a 800 square foot home? I don't know what it would be. I don't know the numbers, but just that idea, right? What it would require. But that is sort of the best case scenario, however, would still be considered and involve a collapse. And then there is unintentional failure, which we can successfully grow until we can't anymore. And at some point, things flip, right? And we enter an age of deflationary pressures, of depression, of economic turmoil, and all of the things that would come with that. And that would not be an optimal situation, because it would likely spiral out of control in the way that you would expect a collapse to take place. All right. So again, this is the paradox. You grow, you're going to collapse. You choose not to grow, you're going to collapse. We're already too high up. We're already too far to be able to turn back without these sorts of consequences. All right. So this is kind of silly to kind of end the episode here. I like to think in metaphors or analogies. They just come to mind. I think they make thinking about things a lot more interesting and applicable. So I've got a couple of images that I've drawn up here. Yes, a couple of these are AI-generated images. Do you think of, when you think of collapse, how do you think about it? Do you think about it like society is a rock climber, right? Climbing with no gear. And as we move higher and higher up, we are always at the risk of falling, and the mountain never stops. Our bodies are going to run out of energy, and at some point, we have to let go. The higher we get, the farther we fall. Is that the way you look at it? Do you look at it like a balloon floating in the sky, no choice but to go up until inevitably it leaves the atmosphere and pops? Are we a car that's gone over the edge of a cliff? We're in free fall. The way that I think about it, I think these all have applicable, they're all applicable metaphors for collapse and different types of collapse. The way that I view our system, our collapse, is more like this, a semi-truck, right, which has lost its brakes. I feel like society has had its foot on the gas as we've climbed the hill. We've met the top of the hill at this point. I believe that we have sort of peaked as a species, as humanity. We've peaked. You may disagree with that. I may prove myself wrong with that later on and say, oh, you know what? We had further to climb. Things will continue to improve from the standpoint of quality of life and ease of access to resources and equality and all these different things. A lot of people say we peaked. We peaked in the 70s. I think it's up to interpretation, but the idea is we've had our foot on the gas, and what we haven't realized is that the brakes are already shot. Or we did realize and we didn't care. We just kept our foot on the gas and kept going. As we crest the top of the hill, we continue to put our foot on the gas, right? We continue to grow. At any time, we could say, hey, look, we need to slow down. We need to stop. We need to do whatever it takes to stop, right? Maybe that's taking, if you're in the U.S., you might be familiar, and I don't know if they have these everywhere in the world because I am in the U.S., but I think of the emergency off-ramps that are made of gravel, and that if a truck loses its brakes, it's able to take one of those, right? In a lot of cases, those are successful in slowing you down, but in not every case are they successful in preventing an accident. You know, maybe our best solution to prevent ourselves from going over the edge and careening off a cliff is to intentionally swerve this thing into the side of the mountain. It's still going to cause an accident. We're still going to lose our cargo, right? We're still going to have a massive insurance claim on our truck. Probably going to total it, but it would be better than keeping our foot on the gas until we do literally find ourselves careening off the edge of a cliff in a downfall, in a free fall, where there is no control at all. Which is what I think will happen if society continues its efforts to grow. I think we hit that cliff. Okay. Lastly, we're already collapsing. Like I said, I think we kind of crested that hill. I think we have hit the point where society has maxed out its ability to extract resources in a way that keeps us moving towards a better quality of life, towards better technology and all of those things. On top of this, we have tipping points, right? Those tipping points, once crossed, which many already have been crossed and which many will be crossed in the future, they accelerate things and they signal points of no return. These tipping points have happened, are happening, and will continue to happen across climate change, ecology, biodiversity loss, resource depletion, pollution, and a whole bunch of others. These things act on themselves. They define exponential growth, right? They create exponential growth in these growth imperative consequences. So when we talked about, you know, all the things that the podcast has been about in the past, each episode that we did, each on a micro aspect of society, that all builds up to the massive complexity that we have, each of those items continues to worsen and cross thresholds that cannot be taken back. So the fact that we've already crossed many of those, you know, just recently this week, at the time of recording this, they announced that we reached 2 years at the 1.5 degrees Celsius average worldwide. That is catastrophic, and that happened very quickly. This was something that, you know, 5 years ago, they were saying we could potentially avoid by 2100. And they won't say, they still won't claim that we've crossed the 1.5 degrees Celsius line. They say it has to be like a 10-year average. But for all intents and purposes, we're at that temperature. We're seeing the consequences of that. And that temperature has, again, its own baked-in feedback loops that will cause the temperature to continue to rise. Lastly, the wheels of the catabolic collapse train are in motion. Catabolic collapse, episode 5 of the podcast, we go into that deeper, is this theory coined by John Michael Greer. And it's very simply put, this idea that we have maintenance costs to our capital. Capital would be things like our infrastructure, it's our resources, it's everything involved in making society what it is, right? We have built up this massive, complex machine out of capital. And the maintenance costs to keep that massive machine running get more and more expensive the bigger you build it and as time goes on. You can picture it like a massive machine. Think of the most complex machine you've ever seen. This is that times a trillion. And you can picture that each component needs to be cleaned. It needs to be replaced every once in a while. It needs to be maintained. There's all sorts of tests and things that have to happen to keep the machine running. And we've built this machine that is so complex that the requirements of that maintenance is out of hand. And the problem is we can no longer pay. We can't pay the costs to maintain that machine. We see that in our weakening infrastructure. We see that in the quality of our roads. We see that in the both increase in bureaucracy and decrease in efficiency, and also in the loss of that bureaucracy. Right now, in the U.S., through DOGE, which is the new Department of Governmental Efficiency run by Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy, it's an acceleration of catabolic collapse. Those institutions in the U.S., those governmental institutions, which have become highly bureaucratic, they are inefficient. Does that mean that they should be voluntarily removed? Probably not. Look, different people will have different ideas on this. But essentially, I guess what I'm saying is, over time, all of those bureaucratic institutions will eventually break down. They already are. Elon Musk and Donald Trump, their goal here is basically accelerating the collapse of that infrastructure. Hundreds of millions of people rely on the benefits that those provide. But it's becoming harder and harder for us to be able to keep up on those benefits. The reason that DOGE is in place is because it is an effort to save money. Because again, our maintenance costs of capital mean that we have to consolidate in some way. And so they are seeing that, hey, there's all these organizations that cost a whole lot of money and that aren't run very efficiently. And so their answer is just to gut them. Is that the right answer? Well, I'm not the person to ask that, right? The consequences of it are an acceleration of catabolic collapse and will mean that many people who rely on those institutions, those organizations, are going to go without the benefits that they provided. And for many people, those are probably necessary to maintain their lifestyles. This will cause personal collapses and in some cases could cause regional collapses. This idea of the DOGE that I'm bringing up here, this governmental efficiency organization, I don't know if they're calling it an organization. This is just an example, one example of the ways in which catabolic collapse takes place. But this is a very fascinating look at how a government starts to rip itself apart. Natural decay in systems takes place over time. It's been taking place in U.S. infrastructure for a long time. This is basically seeing the rot of those systems and cutting it off completely. But it's like cutting your hand off because you've got an infection, right? You're going to lose the use of that hand, and it's going to have consequences. So anyway, fascinating stuff. It'll be really interesting to do episodes on the results of that as it happens. But in the end, catabolic collapse means that our systems will break down, and it's already happening. In the U.S. and throughout the world, there is a lack of upkeep of our infrastructure, of our capital, and it cannot be replaced at the rate that it needs to be in order to keep society functioning. We don't have the resources for it. We don't have the energy for it. All right. These are the reasons why I think collapse is inevitable. I would love to hear your thoughts. Feel free to leave a comment here on the YouTube video. It's probably the best place to leave comments in a centralized way. I am thinking about, now that I have more time, starting a Discord channel. I think it would be great to have a community of people where we can come together and discuss these topics, especially as we're going through them in the podcast. I recognize there are so many different ideas and opinions, and I'm open to hearing them all. I'm not, as I said, the ultimate resource to go to on these items. Some of the episodes I want to do in the future are going to be talking about other resources, other people who are experts in their individual fields, in their aspect, right, of the consequences of the growth imperative. But I hope this was beneficial. I hope you enjoyed the episode. Again, let me know if you have questions or comments. We'll look forward to hopefully creating that Discord channel here in the future. I'll bring out more information about that as we do. Lastly, if you want more content, again, we have a Patreon. And by we, I mean I have a Patreon. I'm used to saying we because Kellen's always been a part of this. But you can join me on Collapse Pod on Patreon. $5 a month, you can have access to the past 100 and however many 50 bonus episodes that we've done, plus each bonus episode that we release every week. All right. Thanks, folks. Have a good one. Hey, Corey here. If you are listening to the back catalog of Breaking Down Collapse, thank you. Those episodes are so vital. They're so important. But I also wanted to let you know that I am now doing daily episodes. Yes, that's right. Here on the podcast, daily episodes. So if you are enjoying the back catalog, great. Please also feel free to zoom forward to the most recent episodes. Catch us daily. They are quick little episodes, and I think you'll enjoy them. Thanks.